Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, Penn State's collective supporting over 800 student athletes across 31 sports at Penn State. I'm Jim Galante. With me, executive director over at Happy Valley United, Mike Villagrana. Mike, how are we doing?
Oh, we're good. We're doing really good. Just experiencing a little bit of this fluctuation of weather. And it's been I heard a rumor this week that when the robins come out, that the winter ends. And that's false.
Never believe it. Whenever you think it's done, you get another hit. I'm 100 miles east of you guys, and we're recording on Sunday. A lot of folks hearing this on Monday, they know the end result. My favorite with the weatherman is all the way going through, well, just give us another day and we'll pin it down. It's Sunday afternoon here in Bloomsburg. They still haven't pinned it down yet, Mike. So I have no idea if I'm going to get no snow, an inch of snow, or a foot of snow.
But that reminds me of Curb Your Enthusiasm when the meteorologist guy calls for rain, but he's on the course.
Well, I never trust them. The best weather forecast, look outside and see what's happening. That's exactly. That's about all you got. A lot going on, Thon weekend. Also, the Olympics going on. We're here to talk college football, but do you get into the Olympics at all, Mike?
Yeah, I do. Probably more so than I ever have, just with my kids, my family. I got a 7 and an 11-year-old, and you know, they're into sports now, and it's just like they're starting to realize it and like understand it now, which is pretty cool. And like just some of the like videos and the scenery of how they set some of that stuff up in for the Winter Olympics is unreal. It doesn't even look real. It looks like AI generated.
Well, that some of that coverage I think really makes it, you know, where they have the drones who are following the people on the bobsled. So it almost feels like you're on the bobsled with them.
Yeah, that's probably why it's probably that much better, is like just the ability to cover and the content and the quality of the content. It's unreal. It really is.
It's fantastic. But I'll give you my two quick thoughts on the Winter Olympics, the things that I like. It's called like that short track speed skating where there's like six guys on the ice at the same time. Do you remember roller derby?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And the other thing that I found that I really love, three-man hockey for overtime. I'm not the biggest hockey guy. I enjoy going to games. I think it's fun when you're there live. But on TV, typically, doesn't do a lot for me. But my goodness, when these games go into overtime and it's three-on-three, it's phenomenal. I think they should start a 3-on-3 hockey league.
Yeah. Well, because you have more space and yeah, I definitely can see that. But yeah, I'm not like, I grew up, you know, in the area I grew up was kind of, it's West Youngstown, west of Pittsburgh, but a huge hockey area. And so I grew up liking the Penguins, and anytime the Winter Olympics came on, it was ice hockey. You know, it was, you're going to follow the U.S. And then so for the U.S. to do what they did was pretty cool, and all the pageantry and everything that goes. You know what I thought about? Honestly, what really comes to my mind, the first thing was, man, those Canadians got to sit there forever while the U.S. gets honored. Like, that's probably more painful than anything else.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, I took note of that too. Those poor guys, they have to stand around, wait for the celebration to calm down. Then they got to do the handshake thing, which I, great credit to the sport itself. And again, I'm not a big hockey guy, but that kind of sportsmanship after you play a game where in that finals where there was the high sticking, knocked a couple teeth out of the guy. And he still plays the game. You see him at the end celebrating, and he smiles, and his teeth are missing.
Yeah.
Those guys are so tough. They are so tough, Mike. I respect that.
And what I like, too, is like how we talk about, you know, when we joke about, you know, current climate with, like, politics and all that good stuff. It's like when you get something like that and it happens, it kind of brings everybody together, I feel like. No matter what you believe in, it brings everybody together, which is awesome to see.
Well, do you, you're probably not old enough to remember the 80 Miracle on Ice.
No.
And it was even more so what you bring up, that shared experience throughout the country. And back then it was the big, bad, evil Russians, you know, that they had to beat to get to the finals. And
yeah,
just, but to your point, yeah, it's fun to see everybody, you know, rooting for the same side. It's a lot of fun. Some of the things, the sport is phenomenal. And you know what sport really seemed to catch on was curling.
And oh my God, yeah.
I don't know.
Totally showed.
Yes, if you've seen some of these videos, people, no matter where they are working, they emulate curling. There was one from an airport where the guy, he tosses a suitcase that's on wheels. The janitor with his big long broom, he's doing the sweeping.
I've seen them. You know what? Pagula just had the curling club have an event just the other day, and it was packed.
Really?
So good people could come in and see you know what it's all about. Like the brooms and everything. And I saw it, which was really neat.
It was, and it's amazing how that sport has just taken hold. And it's crazy, but I watched it, Mike. It was crazy.
Well, every time I watch that, it's like why wouldn't bocce be like maybe an Olympic sport?
You know what?
It's just as hard.
Yes. I don't know about you, if you had a similar ethnic background, but for me, when I was a kid, the old guys at the Italian club always played bocce. It was a big deal.
Yeah, we got a place. It's kind of like almost a touristy place in Youngstown. It's called MVR, and really good Italian food. Anytime you go in there, it's just nostalgic, like old school, like dive-ish, but big place. And you'll see all the coaches that have come through Youngstown on the board, signed up or with an autograph, and all the players and whatnot. And but they have a huge bocce court. It's really popular. It's really fun, really cool. But yeah, like every time I see curling, I'm like, oh, this is like bocce.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll lobby for bocce maybe in the next Summer Olympics, since it's not a winter sport. We'll work on that. But hey, what do you think, Mike? How about we talk some college football? What do you think?
I mean, what kind? What I mean, there's so much to talk about. Roster, money, legal. Like, there's so much to talk about.
There really is, but I thought today what we could do a little bit is tap into your expertise here, Mike. Not just throw opinions, but actual facts and understanding. I think there's so much going on with the compensation for players that folks still don't understand completely. And of course, part of that is it's changing so fast. Yeah. How about we just hit a little bit of history first on, for the NIL time, it was just wild, wild west. Now it's just like one wild, wild west, okay? Not multiple wilds. And it was kind of the house settlement that kind of starts to put things in order a little bit. So how about if we start there, Mike, and explain what the house settlement is and what it meant?
Yeah, and just so the audience knows, like when I came back this time last year into this role, it's my first time in an exclusive like you know, collective role. I've been leading recruiting departments for the last 10 years or whatever. So when I got out and then I came here, it was really kind of when NIL was taking off, and then the house settlement was going to hit for the first time, or the house rev money was going to be hitting last summer for the first time. So I kind of like got to grow up this past year through all of it. And even just obviously with HVU, we've completely, totally pivoted like a ton of times. And what's funny, you bring that up, because like a lot of our current partners and past partners that I've been a part of and haven't been a part of since being here, it's educating them on why we exist, what are the collectives doing? And that comes back to your question, right? It's okay, well, what is the money from when it's house rev, right? To how are a lot of universities dealing with it right now? Well, when we first started, when I first started, when I got here, you know, it was a tax write-off for collectives. And then they took that away. So then collectives pivoted and they weren't targeting donors for larger donations and stuff like that, right? They were just then pivoting to, okay, we'll just do events and sponsorships and activations and all that kind of good stuff. So then that, you know, that still is a thing. But to understand the house rev is money that the school can pay. Right. And the athlete doesn't have to do anything. So, you know, ex athlete comes in, say a quarterback, and they got to determine how much money they're going to pay that quarterback. And then what a lot of schools are doing is to stay under the cap is they're paying X amount of money, whether it's 1/3, 2/3 or whatever, with a certain athlete as their template of house rev. So that athlete's going to get an X amount of their contract that was negotiated through the agent and the school to come from house rev. The other money is going to come third party. And that's where you're getting all these like crazy numbers that you're hearing, 30, 35 million, 40 million. I think I even heard 60 million. Wow. So that's, yeah. And that's where like, you just don't know, because obviously just with the way that things are, you just don't know what people are spending. But There is validity to schools setting up contracts with athletes that an X amount of that money is going to come from the rev share, which is $21.5 million, right? That's allocated to all sports. And then there's the third party money. But with the third party money, third party meaning like a collective or somebody outside of the school.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to interrupt you there, Mike, because we're going to hit a hard break right here. How about we just pick it up in quarter number two, right from that point? I knew I should have asked you the question earlier than I did.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
We'll pick it up right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Mike Villagrana, Executive Director over at HVU, quarter number two of our show. Mike, you were just saying between the break, this feels like a normal work day for you, because this kind of explanation is something you need to deal with pretty much every day on your job. We were just talking about, you know, post-house settlement, how the compensation for players differs now. As you were saying, there's an allocation for student athletes, $21 million, but we know football budgets go well beyond that, so there's additional money coming in.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing, like, it's really changed for me the whole entire year, this past year that I've been back here. And like I said in the last segment, you know, this is the first time me just being in this space exclusively. So there was a lot of learning moments for me and kind of coming in green, thinking I kind of knew it because previously at Virginia Tech, like, you deal with it, but it's not just your job exclusively, right? So I learned a lot, but I mean, it's changed so much. Like, it literally, it feels like every other week, you know, we're making a pivot because of maybe a CSC rule or a new bylaw or, hey, this
just
is
real quick. You mentioned a CSC rule. Could you explain who the CSC is?
Yeah. So the College Sports Committee is the committee that is tasked with enforcing that all the third party money is legit. So all the third party money that, you know, we want to be able to provide to the athletes has to go through NIL Go, which is a contract, right? And that contract has to be approved by NIL Go and the CSC. And so basically with a lot, what a lot of schools are doing and why a lot of collectors are becoming media agencies, because the activations that they got to do to legitimize the their contract is like podcast appearances, you know, social reposts, social promoting, like stuff that's pretty easy lifts for them to do, but it's very valuable to companies and other restaurants or whatever, any business like that. So it's really kind of like where we're at now, which I've been kind of enjoying this like reset, because I've always thought of a collective with a school and that community, especially here at Penn State. Obviously, it should be a win-win, right? For the collective, the school, the NIL, the overall bucket, right? The bottom line, and the community, whether that's a local company or a restaurant, right? Or something like that, especially in a town that's smaller compared to some like metropolitan areas, you know, like those local businesses are that much more important to the company. So for me, in the position I am, if I'm able to have a platform where I'm able to help the community, the restaurants, the companies, with recognition or any kind of activation with an athlete that brings more business to their company, while I'm able to knock out an activation with them that's going to make their NIL Go contract legit, like, that's a win-win to me. And so my big push as of late, and honestly really recently, the last week and a half, with a couple other people, is raising the awareness about what we're doing with the local community, because the way that we're positioned, it doesn't make sense not to work with the local community and restaurants and companies, because of your original question. What is NIL Go and the money now? There's the rev, right, which is usually a big chunk of each player's contract, and not just football. Remember, this is all sports, especially at Penn State, where, well, you know, we excel at a lot of sports. You know, then there's the third-party money. All right, that's where I come in, and my team and everybody, we're helping to get activations with Rocco Beck, you know, podcasts, you know, stuff like that, where they need to do it to make their contract legitimate, the other part of their contract, the third party party contract, right? But also it's helping his branding. It's helping his branding, whoever he's you know, collaborating with. It's just overall, I think, I know it's still Wild Wild West. It still is, don't get me wrong. But like, I think this path for collectives is a really good, stable path for the future.
Well, and in the House settlement, and I think there's some equation to figure out the amount of money that each school could compensate. And right now it's at about $21 million. And as you pointed out, that's money that goes across the board to all student athletes.
Yeah.
But it's compensation for the revenue that's being created by the student athletes. And I think this is something folks don't understand. It's, I've gotten this. I've heard from, you know, lay people who will say, well, why are football players getting so much of the money? They're bringing in most of the revenue though, right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, that's just like that. That's just general, like, one-on-one business stuff. You look at the books, and like, you're going to see where you need to allocate your money towards, the just where are you getting your ROI, right? Like, so that's just what, you know, and it could be different at another school, right? Like, wrestling's huge here. So that's going to allocate more money than other schools around the country. But I think what you're going to see, other than maybe some Big East schools, is like most of the money, most of your return you're going to get is with football. You know, so that's where the money's going to be allocated. I'm glad I don't have that job, because I can only imagine if I'm, you know, at a school and I'm a coach, you know, of a smaller sport, but then I'm seeing all the money getting allocated there, and then that sport has to, you know, do their own fundraising and stuff. That could probably be frustrating naturally, but that's just the business we're in right now. And when you're looking at those numbers, you got to look at it from a business standpoint. All right, so where are we going to put the money back in where we're going to get a bigger return? It's really that simple. Like I said, I'm a West Virginia grad. I'm not that smart, but I think that makes sense to a lot of people.
Well, what's interesting, you alluded to this a little bit when you mentioned Big East, which is so many of those teams, they don't play football, so they don't have to worry about that. It's going to be intriguing to see. I'm not sure we've seen the effect of it yet. But if you have $21 million and the vast majority goes to football, there's not much left. Men's basketball is probably next up, as it's a revenue sport. But what if you don't have football and basketball is your big revenue sport? If you're Georgetown or St. John's or Marquette or Xavier, one of those kind of schools, I'm waiting for those schools to start spending more of their money basketball than what the other schools could do. And I'm waiting to see that take effect in college basketball, Mike.
Yeah. And if you're in a position like one of those schools, so now that you don't have to allocate money to football, so they have already rev share money that those athletes aren't going to have to do anything with. So that's an advantage on its own, right? And let alone just the sheer amount of money that they're going to get versus, you know, what a football school would get. Like, it's just, it's really it's a real advantage for those schools. But that's not the majority, right? Like the St. John's and the Georgetowns, they should be able to capitalize off of that. And that should, you know, help them scale from a school standpoint. But most schools aren't dealing with that. And like I've always pointed out to you and on the show, is that Penn State, it's a good and a bad thing. You know, we're really good at a lot of sports, right? But that puts a lot more strain on the decisions that administration has to make when it comes to allocating that $21.5 million.
A lot more mouths to feed.
I'll say this too. I want to make sure I say this too. Like, I got to experience Don in person for the first time this weekend, and I've always known about Don. I think everybody knows about Don if you're associated with Penn State, but actually experience it is like a different. It's just different, and so I encourage anybody to go out and, you know, buy a ticket or get in to the BJC and experience that at some point, because it is special. But I bring that up because we did something yesterday with all athletics. You know, we went to the indoor facility and we got to see all the sports were there. Football had their own thing going on last, which was awesome too. But all sports are involved and were kind of had their own little areas where kids could go and they're interacting. And it was like, it's just so refreshing to see our athletes that are so like humble and able to, in a world where it's all social media, IG, look at me type of deal, to put that aside and then look at these kids. And honestly, I think that's tough for a lot of kids these days. They're getting paid and they're getting told that they're the best in the world, right? And they're seeing it all the time on social media, how great they are, right? So I just feel like it's really hard for a kid that's still maturing, you know, at 18, 19, 20 years old, to be able to put that aside and see something that means so much more than just sports. So I think that's something special about Penn State and our kids. And I just wanted to say that, because I always say Penn State's special, but this is really something. This past weekend is something that really, really makes Penn State special.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, and I'm glad you did, because you and I have this conversation often on this show about how special Penn State is. And it's not necessarily because, oh, they have a good football program. There's more going on that makes Penn State special. Thon might be the best example. And, you know, you've been to different places in the country, the coaching, and just for different work I've done where I've traveled, and you say you're Penn Stater, there's certain people that, oh, you know, it's cultish there, that Penn State cult. And when trying to explain why it's special, I think the lead explanation should be something like Thon.
Yeah. For what a lot of people don't understand, it's a student-run organization that raises money for pediatric cancer, and they dance. They start at 6 o'clock on Friday, they end, I think, 4 o'clock today or on Sunday. And it's just really impressive. The one kid that I didn't know, and we're talking the other day, and he's like, this is so special to me because, I mean, my dad went here, and he danced. It's like, man. That is so cool what Thon has built up, what they do for cancer, for pediatric cancer. It's really insane. It
does bring the whole community together, which
yeah,
is fantastic. 100%.
100%.
Mike, that's it. We're going to get back to this compensation of players. Lots of questions for you. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Well, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State collective serving over 800 student-athletes across 31 sports at Penn State. I'm Jim Galante, along with Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at HVU. This is quarter number 3 of our show. Mike, I'll tell you what, as we were talking about this, the expression, the Wild West, or the Wild Wild West, I'll put it. And it feels like it's beginning to calm down at least some. And you triggered something in the conversation about how it's been changing. I read an article, remember the kid Rashada, quarterback from Florida, and he's been to about 4 different schools since then.
Yeah.
And he was one of the original lawsuits when he left. He sued them. I think they promised him money and then didn't show up with it, and it became a big deal. And the amount of money involved, I don't know, $8 million, $10 million, $12 million, you keep hearing all these different numbers. And it's hard to understand what was going on then, because now here's where I'm headed, and I'm doing it very awkwardly. At that time, nobody knew how this worked. How much money are you supposed to give a quarterback? What does it take? And the money was starting to get absolutely crazy. And it's just in this last year that I've begun to see things like, here's the standard contract for a guard. Here's a standard contract for a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end. It sounds like there's actually some structure beginning to happen that, oh, okay, that's a lot of money for a quarterback, but that's the high end for it. And are we beginning to see that a little bit of a understanding? Again, there's going to be schools spending a lot more money, but there seems to be at least a little bit of a structure to it.
Yeah, I would say that probably has to do with the fact that it's been going on for X amount of time now, so we have a better sense, a better sample size. But the problem is we don't have any data, actual data points, to base our decisions off of that sample, right? So I think what a lot of people have been doing, and I've seen it firsthand, is it's just information sharing amongst other schools. Right. So a lot of people are going to be helpful. The agents, because the agents are going to try to leverage all of these schools. So you don't know what's what. So being able to have like honest conversations, it'd be like one GM from the Pittsburgh Steelers talking to the other GM from the Buffalo Bills about a potential trade. Right. What are you offering him? Why we're out offering X amount of money. Now, is that happening? No, but there's what I'm just saying is there's more information and people are more apt to talk about that information. So there is some kind of baseline, because you said more of a structure. There is no structure at all, right? It's just more information sharing, so more people understand, all right, what is being offered at these positions, right? So, yeah, you'll still have the Texas Techs and, you know, the Miamis of the world throw some outlandish money at people. But honestly, I just don't think that it's – I don't think that's sustainable. I think that's just like win now, I got more money right now. But from a business concept, that's not sustainable. So, yeah, so I think people are starting to understand what the market is at each position. But there's still no structure, right? So – it's good. That's a good thing. That's a positive sign, but still being able to have some kind of collective bargaining agreement or something like that, is still needed. So we have data points. We have, it's a fair market. We know exactly what we can spend. And then honestly, the third party money is where they're going to really have to get some hands around that part, because that's where the outlandish contracts are coming from.
Right. So in effect, the $21 million is sort of the salary structure, the salary cap.
Yeah.
And the NIL money, it's that extra money that's uncontrolled. And I'm not sure
it is controlled, ever be, allegedly.
It has is to controlled. Be legitimate. It has to be
allegedly. But there's okay. But Jim, there's schools out there that's saying the CSC, the College Sports Committee, it's not legit. It's gonna fall. It's not gonna be a thing in a couple of months or whatever. So they're just rolling the dice and just going ahead and giving these kids money outside of rev share, all right, and just saying screw it, try me. Like, and I can tell you for a fact that's not what Penn State's doing. Penn State's doing it the right way, but that's the problem amongst the whole college space, is that you have maybe 2/3 of college coaches and organizations, front offices, whatever you want to name it, doing it the right way. And then you got a third that does not care. And you can probably guess those schools. And it's usually those schools who want to tout, you know, their big money guy or money guys. So yeah, that's kind of how it is right now.
And you're right. I don't know how they would be able to police that, even with collective bargaining, because if it ever goes to a court system, you know, it's like, hey, you're restricting my ability to make money. Yeah. If Joe alumni wants to hand me a check for $1 million, who are you to tell me I can't make that money?
Yeah. And trust me, what we're talking about is like the easiest form to do it, right? It's the easiest way that you're going to hear about these contracts and the third party money. But there's actually a lot of smart people in this world that have business backgrounds that are able to say, all right, why don't you pull money from there and do this and do that? And then, you know what? That makes sense and you're legitimate. There's so many people in rooms at every school trying to figure out those scenarios. And a lot of people are already executing those scenarios that they've come up with, but you don't have a strong enforcement, i.e. the College Sports Committee, to come in and say, okay, you just submitted that deal or you didn't. So they can't monitor anything that they don't know that they didn't submit. It's just, it's a bad deal right now from there. And that's where you're hearing, you know, a lot of coaches crying out for some leadership.
You are. And I'm still like trying to figure out how the court system could battle this. If, because there are ways around it, even if there are rules, if I'm the head of a large company and I want to, you know, hire Joe Quarterback to endorse my company nationally, it's a way for me to give him a lot of money and, you know, call it, hey, an endorsement deal. So
yeah, you know what it's like? It's like when you were back in school back in the day and you went in and you saw biology class seventh period was a substitute teacher. Perfect. Well, at least I was that kid. And I was like, all right, I'm going to torture this teacher. All right, I'm going to do whatever the heck I want. That's what the CSE is right now to me, because they came in and they don't have any substance behind what they've been doing so far. Now, I might backtrack, and, you know, this next week that we talk, you know, they might come down with a hammer on some schools, but up to this point, they haven't. And there really hasn't been a voice, right? I think Seeley is the head of it. He's a baseball guy, right? But he hasn't like done anything. I think they've came out and said they're investigating. Okay, sweet. Okay, so you're investigating one school on something probably not as big as what 50 other schools are doing and executing at the same time. It's a joke to me, and it's a shame. But I think eventually, I don't know what's going to happen. You got the president talking about coming on in, messing with it. But I don't know. But that whole part is, it's still Wild Wild West.
Well, what I'm wondering is if there's areas that they can come down on within the schools themselves. Like we saw the Dabo Swinney thing at Clemson, where he had a player, a linebacker who they had signed, sealed, delivered, was moved into Clemson. This was through the portal. And all of a sudden, somebody else, Ole Miss, he has the receipts. He has the, you know, the phone calls, the text messages, where another school, where it's hard to police an outside person from doing something. But can you do something to the schools themselves with that, say, tampering? And I know they're probably just saying they're investigating, but could they actually do anything about it?
That's a great question. When did that happen? Like a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, at least, if not a month. We haven't heard anything. And actually, to make it even worse, Coach Golden, the Ole Miss head coach, you know, came out with some like snarky reply that basically try me. Like that's where we're at though. He blatantly tampered. There's receipts. You have a well-respected coach, which I've said I'm not a big fan of Dabo.
Me either.
But he's a very well-respected coach, has what, two national championships, whatever. So he gets his respect. He comes out and he had legal walk him through that whole 8-minute rant. I mean, it was detailed. And we're sitting here, Jim, today and a month out at least, and we still haven't heard anything. Like that, to me, but me, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, I'm having to get in trouble because I sent a graphic to a high school coach. And yeah, they were all over me because of that. But the stuff that actually matters, especially now, they're not handling. And I don't think they can, because they don't have any legs, because they're just going to get crushed in court. Legal fees, they're going to go broke. All that good stuff. Like, that is legitimate, all those narratives.
Well, that's what I'm not a Dabo Swinney fan either, but I respected him for doing that. I respected how he did it, how he had all the details. And if there was ever an incident that the NCAA or the powers that be could come down hard, and it's not because it's an outside person handing the kid money who you have no effect over, it's the school itself or the employees of the school or the coaches.
Mike, that's it for this segment. When we come back for quarter number four, I want to ask you about the role of the general manager in all of this. All of a sudden, you've got to allocate those dollars to different positions. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. The NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. I'm Jim Galante. He's Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at HVU. This quarter number four of our show. And Mike, between segments, you said we could talk forever on this topic. And it's true because there's so many aspects of it. And, you know, in quarter three, we were just talking about how I'm not sure there's any way to police it. We just, you go to court, especially when there's these eligibility for these players, they take it to court and an Ole Miss player wants to keep playing, so he takes it to a local judge in Mississippi. How do you think that guy's going to rule? We all know. But let's go back to the other two-thirds of the schools that do kind of follow the rules. And we talked about it. There's $21 million to allocate. And then there's additional money that comes from that NIL avenue where allegedly players are supposed to, they're supposed to be legitimate compensation for work done. Schools, they're going to have a budget larger than that $20 million for football. Let's just use $30 million as a number. There's some schools, I'm sure they're going higher. There's talk of $40 million, $50 million type budgets. But there's a budget. So there's $30 million and you're putting a team together. This is where that general manager comes in, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can't imagine being in that seat, especially because I was before this evolution of NIL. And honestly, I had the general manager title, you know, at Marshall. But I was telling somebody this last week. I was like, that was just when like it was still scaling these positions and the front office was evolving into more of an NFL front office. And but I didn't do negotiations, right? And I didn't do the cap, and we didn't have a cap to work with. There wasn't rep share. So what these GMs now have to do is insane. And it's a first. So you're seeing all these schools kind of roll out different structures that make sense to them. Like in the past with James Franklin, it was Andy Frank was the, you know, the GM. And Andy was a cap guy. Like he was a numbers guy, you know, smart guy. And they had their own philosophy, how they wanted to break it down, where the money was going to go. But Andy wasn't a guy that was dealing with agents. And, you know, he had his team and delegation. He had a structure for that. Derek's got his team, but I would say it's more front office. And Derek is more like a, you know, he's doing a little bit of everything. You know, he's talking to the coaches. He's talking about some of the hires. He's talking about the recruits. He's talking about the money, the negotiations. He's talking to the agents. And really, it's really impressive for me, somebody that's been in that chair prior to NIL, really kicking off like it has now, to see somebody kind of operate it like he is doing now. And not only operate it, kind of like at I just know how I am. And even pre-NIL, like I was always kind of stressed out. There's always something going on. But then just to see kind of like how Derek Hoosier kind of handles things and his temperament with everybody, you know, from guys like me to guys like, you know, just a recruiting guy or just a external guy, like it's pretty impressive how he's dealing with people, and probably is a big reason why, you know, we've gotten off a really good start with our recruiting, our staff, the cohesion, and, you know, everything that goes with a transition like this.
Well, what you have, though, is the, I think one of the big questions and interesting questions as a guy who's played, you know, in those fantasy sports where you have a budget and where you allocate your money, it's how do you allocate your money? And it's, I think you've mentioned, it's like, well, hey, we could only spend so much money on the linebacker room. We could only spend so much money on, you know, the running back room. But what it's also going to do, Mike, is create that question. Everyone's talking about with the portal. So if I'm going to bring in that quarterback who I think could win a national championship because we've seen him play, the experience, we're bringing him in, you'll pay him top dollar. But what about the question of the high school recruits now? You know, it's like, are you paying top dollar for a guy who you know is probably going to sit on the bench for a year before he gets on the field, and then he may decide to go elsewhere, Mike?
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest question right now and really hot topic, you know, within, you know, every front office or recruiting department in the country. What, where do these high school recruits fit? Whether, and it's really the ones that are the ones demanding the high-end money, right? Like you said, well, if he's not going to play his first year, what is he going to do? Because he's usually, those guys that are making, are demanding the high money are the guys that are the 4 or 5 stars that are getting told that they are God's gift to earth every single day. So then for them to get a bag per se, or that amount that they demand to go to a school to not play 1 year, we've just brainwashed and created a sociopath, essentially. Right?
Yes. Yep.
So he comes in with this money and his parents and his pride and whatever, and the car and the apartment, and he's not playing. All right. So people are going to start talking. People in his corner, right? Agent, family, cousin, uncle. I think I heard a great thing from my head coach say, the worst person you can talk to is that uncle of a single mother. Oh. It's the worst, because they are just going to badger you. But it's just, my point is, like, it's an ROI question. Is that kid going to be able to bring in an ROI and win? And then how much are we paying him? And then what type of kid is he? Is he going to be able, has the school been transparent with the kid about, hey, you may not play this first year. You're sitting in front of two, you know, potential NFL running backs, say last year, you know, like, you're going to have to deal with that. Rather than have a really good identification system when it comes to college kids. Remember, we talking about, hey, if a kid has X amount of snaps, he's getting a grade and an evaluation on him, right? That's happening all throughout the country. So why not put more time and resources or money in somebody that has 2-3 years in a college program versus a high school kid? Now, like, I think there's a world where it can work both, but I don't think a kid that is a 5-star kid right now and his agent is going to say, no, we're going to take less money to go to your school. I don't think that's happening. Now, there's the lower guy that per se, the guys that aren't recruited as highly, right? Now, they don't have a lot of guys coming out them with a bunch of numbers. But as soon as those guys get offered, like, especially by, like, schools like Penn State, Ohio State, and the big blue bloods, like, they're going to get everybody else in the country after them. So it's just, it's a tough game. It really is. But I see more value in a portal kid. Because portal doesn't mean he's 4 or 5 years. Right. It may mean he just graduated. I mean, he has 1 year and he was a very underdeveloped O lineman out of high school at at Mississippi, didn't eat anything but McDonald's. And then after 1 year in a program, he looks like Tarzan in the next first round pick in the draft, right? So there's those guys as well. And those guys are even more valuable because they have more years. But at least you have more of a proven product and less of a chance of hitting a landmine.
When and I use often the analogy in baseball, and baseball free agents, sometimes there's a guy who has Tommy John surgery and he's a free agent. So you know he's not going to play this season. So you sign him to a 2-year contract because yeah. I know he's not going to play this season. We help rehab him. We're talking about the 27 season, him playing, but he's worth it to do that.
Yeah.
Long way again for me to say, hey, that incoming stud offensive lineman, he's a 4-5 star, but he may not play that first year, still raw. Why not multiple year contracts? So I put up with him his first year, but I'm paying him for his second and third year.
Yeah, where I would go as far as 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I love the 2-year deal, but there's no guidance to that. There's no guardrails to that. So like no agent is tied or handcuffed to do that. Right. Now, if it is a set line or threshold that like any high school that comes in, that's a 2-year deal, or say 2.5-year deal, depending on when they come in. 2.5, give or take that range, I think would be great. It's like an NFL rookie deal. Right. And then that working towards his second contract. Like, I think that's right. And you know what made me think of this? And I hadn't thought about this till now, but thinking about the last class, our last freshman class, from the 24 class, 25 class. Like I just saw him the other day, Malachi Goodman, like keeping a guy like that, that says a lot about that kid. Because to me, he's the easiest casualty because you're going to bring in a big, big-time kid. But it doesn't matter how big-time he is usually when it comes to O-line and D-lineman. He's still not a man like that, like the room he's going to walk into. So it's going to take a year or two at least, right? But again, like what we're saying, these high-demand recruits, they're gonna struggle with that. Not Malachi. Every time I see Malachi, he's smiling. And he looks like the gargantuan that he is. I just thought about that and wanted to share that.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I just feel, this is my personal opinion, that multi-year contract, and if you need to throw in a baseball analogy, sometimes there's multi-year contracts where the player has an opt-out, but we're seeing these players transferring. How about an opt-out or a buyout? That's what we do with coaches' contracts. You could leave, but it's going to cost you X dollars.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened with the Ole Miss thing, I guess, allegedly. I mean, there's receipts allegedly coming from Golding saying, what is your buyout? To, I think he was a linebacker, right?
Yes.
Yeah, what is your buyout? Like, that is crazy to think that we're in that world, but that whole scenario is crazy. But that, if until we get something that type of stuff fixed, we're screwed.
And that's where I think, Mike, the fix could come in. All right, that's going to be it for our show. Mike, thank you so much. Your expertise really helps us. Hopefully our listeners will know more and understand more about player compensation. We'll see you next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.